WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
What is up, Tuscaloosa, and welcome to the student section. I am your host, Aiden McGuirk, and I am joined by Rennell Foreman. Got a lot of exciting things happening this past weekend in the world of college football and pro football. Not a great weekend to be an Alabama quarterback, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But first, we have a very, very exciting Monday Night Football matchup happening in the next 15 minutes. The defending Super Bowl champions, the Los Angeles Rams, are taking on the San Francisco 49ers tonight. That is going to be a great game. So we're going to get into some predictions. The 49ers are favored -2. So not a big point spread here. And I think that that's reflective of the recent history of these two teams and their matchups over the past several years. But Rennell, who do you got winning this game and by how much?
This is one of those rivalry games that it's always going to be tough. It's going to be very close. I think prediction-wise, I'm going to go 2017 LA Rams. I think they get it done, especially with Trent Williams being out. It's just it's going to be tough for I think Jimmy G to get it going. They got Colton McKivitz out of West Virginia to start in his place, so. You know, it's going to be a tough game. It could go either way, but my official prediction is going to be 2017 LA Rams. I think maybe late game field goal will be right.
Yeah, I like that prediction. Obviously, you mentioned the loss of left tackle Trent Williams for the 49ers, arguably one of the best offensive linemen in general, and probably the best left tackle in the NFL. And of course, the Rams have Aaron Donald. So that's definitely going to be a big matchup there. That offensive line, I'm very interested to see how they handle this pass rush for the Rams. They lost their starting running back, Elijah Mitchell, as well as their starting quarterback in the first game there. So I think the run game is going to probably look maybe not quite as dominant as it has in the past for the 49ers. In particular in this matchup, they haven't really utilized Deebo Samuel as much as I thought they would over the past several games too, which is an interesting note. You know, he had that off-season complaint about maybe not wanting to be used so much in the backfield because he was concerned about his longevity. But, you know, when you look at this matchup, the 49ers have won the past six regular season matchups. It's a tough one, but I think I agree with you. I'm going to take the Rams. I'm going to take them by 7. I think it might not be quite as close. The 49ers have a phenomenal defense, and the Rams have really struggled in terms of rushing the football. And outside of Cooper Kupp, I haven't been overly impressed with the Rams in terms of their playmaking ability in the passing game. So these are all things that we are going to be looking at in this game. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the Rams do pull this one out. Ultimately, you know, so the Rams averaging 3.4 yards per carry. That's the third lowest in rushing yard average. It's just not been a very good offensive start for this defending Super Bowl team, the Los Angeles Rams. I do think that because of this, the Rams are going to look at signing Odell Beckham Jr. later on in the season, especially if they think that they can, you know, make a run to the Super Bowl again. So that's something that I will be following. I don't know what your thoughts are.
As they should. He seems to be going. It seems like he's on like campus visits before he got in the league. He's going everywhere trying to see Tom Brady and going around, but I think his best fit is back with the LA Rams. You know, using correctly, and McVay's just such a guru, you know, especially after his knee injury. Not that he's bad, but I do think athletically he might have taken just a tad step back. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, several ACL tears there for OBJ. Those are terrible and often can impact a player for a whole season afterwards. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that OBJ's best fit is the Rams. I think the city and OBJ match each other very well. Obviously, the offensive system, you have Cooper Kupp there, so OBJ wouldn't be the for sure number one. He wouldn't be relied on as much as if maybe he went elsewhere, like the Green Bay Packers. Like he would be the clear number one and be double teamed a lot. So I think that's something definitely worth watching for later on. Jimmy G taking back the starting role. Of course, Trey Lance, the second year quarterback for the 49ers, goes down in his first game of the season. And Jimmy G gets an opportunity, I think, to kind of use the season as an audition for other teams who may be looking for a quarterback at the end of the season, right?
Yep, I agree. Jimmy G, it's going to be interesting to see how he plays. This year is really just like a demonstration, you know, to see where he could go. I think he's I don't think he's a terrible quarterback, but, you know, there are some flaws. I think he's at his best is like a game manager, a good one at that. You know, he's probably one of the best game managers out right now, but, you know, he's not someone who's going to just sling the ball when you get four or five touchdowns and win you the game and shoot out. It's not really his game.
Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo thus far this season, 31 of 50 for 365 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. So he's rocking right now at about a 61.9% completion percentage. So a pretty decent completion percentage, but, you know, only two passing touchdowns and a pick. So not crazy impressive thus far this season from Jimmy Garoppolo. Of course, he didn't really practice with the team the entire offseason. So you kind of have to give him a little bit of time, I think, to work his way back in with this team. You know, those clips came out where he was working by himself away from the rest of the team. They were going with Trey Lance. They were going all in. Third pick of the draft. They traded away their future to jump up and take Trey Lance. So they were ready and able to start Trey and just see where things went. And of course, Trey Lance goes down and Jimmy Garoppolo has to come back and start for this team. So, you know, that's definitely an interesting storyline to watch as well, is his redevelopment, I guess, with this offense, because he's very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. But it's been a little while since he's been the guy. You know, this whole offseason, it's been Trey Lance. But that is kind of a preview for this game. Very exciting matchup. I'll be watching this one. In terms of injuries, though, talking about quarterbacks getting injured, Tua Tagovailoa, man, what a crazy week that was last week for Tua, starting on Sunday, where they get the major victory over the Buffalo Bills. Tua gets injured. Looks like it could be a concussion. He comes up. He looks a little unsteady. Take him to the locker room. They evaluate him. The NFL's independent neurological specialist rules that he does not have a concussion. It is a back injury, and he goes back into the game, plays well, plays well, looks fine, and is cleared to play Thursday night against the Bengals. Tua, man, after hit in the Bengals game in that matchup in the first half, yikes. He does have a concussion now. It's been ruled, but that was a terrifying moment, I'm sure, for Tua fans. Yeah,
it's honestly heartbreaking seeing that happen. Not even just Tua, anyone. If it happened to anyone, you know, just the way his body. It was just a sad scene. Honestly, I really care about his well-being. I think he should take a few weeks off, regardless of whether or not he's cleared to play. I think the Dolphins are a decent team. They'll be fine without him for 3 to 4 weeks. But, you know, I just don't want the Dolphins to rush him back. You know, this is, you know, he was already hurt, you know, in the Bills game on Sunday. So it was a quick turnaround, and then that happened. I think they definitely should take a break. I'm glad he's okay. He went to the hospital. He was able to, like, walk, you know, do, you know, normal motor, you know, skills. So you know.
Yeah, definitely going to be keeping an eye on Tua Tagovailoa's health. He has been ruled out for this weekend's game against the Jets. So 6 days in advance, the Dolphins are going to go ahead and make that statement that he will not play. But like we said, he took a major hit in that game. And actually what they describe as the fencing position. So if you imagine, for our listeners, you take your hands and you try and stretch your fingers out as wide as they could possibly go. That is what his hands look like. And that is an involuntary response to when your brain smashes itself against your skull. Yeah. So, and, you know, with concussions, it said if you get a concussion, that second concussion that you have, if you continue to play, it's easier to get and it could be incredibly, incredibly dangerous. I know of a ton of stories where high school players, especially, will have received a concussion. They play, they don't get evaluated. And a lot of, I've heard a few stories where guys will actually die on that second concussion and they just pass away because of the severity of a concussion and the brain swelling and all those things. Tua was taken to the University of Cincinnati Hospital and was cleared by the doctors to fly back on the team plane with the team. So he seems to be doing okay. Obviously, not a fatal injury for Tua, but he will not play this week. And it's unsure and unknown if he will play the following week for the Dolphins when they take on the Minnesota Vikings. But definitely not playing this week against the Jets. The Dolphins are taking their time. Now, this has been a big storyline because concussions obviously are a major, major injury, and the NFL has these independent neurological specialists who are there at every single game to evaluate each player if they believe a player has a potential concussion. And Tua was evaluated by the NFL's own independent neurological specialist and was cleared to come back in and play. But you know, given the injury and the discovery that Tua was in fact concussed, the NFL Players Association obviously opened an investigation into whether or not the Miami Dolphins and the independent specialists followed the concussion protocol. And it was found that the independent specialist did not follow the protocol and made several errors. So he has been fired by the NFL Players Association, as is their right, because they are the ones who lobbied for these independent neurological science specialists to come in. So he has been fired, rightfully so. You know, cutting corners with players' health is unacceptable. And, you know, unfortunately, the Dolphins took a loss that Thursday night against the Bengals after Tua went out. They were playing really well with Tua. Teddy Bridgewater comes in. They just could not get enough going on offense. Their defense played relatively well.
That's deflating. Seeing that happen to your starter, your leader, that's deflating. Yeah.
Exactly. But that leaves the Philadelphia Eagles as the only undefeated team in the NFL after they took on the Jacksonville Jaguars and the former Eagles head coach, Eagles Super Bowl winning head coach, Doug Peterson. Big game for him as he went back to Philadelphia to face his former team. The Eagles, man, they looked great. They ran for over 200 yards, 210 yards on a team. Miles Sanders ran for 134 on his own. Jalen Hurts did not have the best day, 16 to 25, 204 yards in the air, no touchdowns and one interception. So not a fantastic performance by Jalen Hurts, but the Eagles found a way to win on the ground. Jalen Hurts did carry the ball 16 times for 38 yards and a touchdown on the ground. So with the Eagles being the only undefeated team left, are they the best team in the NFL?
No. Personally, in my opinion, I do not think so. I think they're very good, but I will say I think the NFC side of the league is a little weaker, even than usual. There's a lot of teams that don't look too good. The Packers, don't look as good as they should, even given the fact that they have a lack of receiver depth. The Bucs just got absolutely destroyed by the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. And those are the two teams that really come into mind. So I think they're a top five team in the league, but I do think there are better teams. I think the Chiefs are better. I think the Bills are better. And I think Dolphins with Tua are better. They look really good. I think they're a very strong, tough team. But it will be interesting to see when Jalen can't run 16 times effectively, how their offense is going to work out. And they go against a good defense, and they're going to have to throw the ball and really score the football. They have a weak schedule. So the Eagles, as of now, I think that at least they're a top five.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think the Chiefs are better. I do think the Bills are better. I'm not so sure about the Dolphins. I'm just not crazy about their offensive line still. And I think with guys like Fletcher Cox and Jordan Davis, if we were to go one-on-one, I think the Eagles' D-line might get the better of the Miami Dolphins' O-line. But the Eagles are certainly one of, if not the best teams in the NFC, like you mentioned. And they will take on the Arizona Cardinals this upcoming weekend. So that will be an interesting matchup. Let's see. DeAndre Hopkins not back in that game, but he will be for the Cardinals afterwards. But that would have been an incredible matchup to see him going up against Darius Slay. Yeah, played incredibly well.
I do want to say I think it's going to be interesting to see how that defensive line is going to operate with a very mobile quarterback, especially like Kyler Murray. He's so slippery. He's so small and compact. That's when he's at his best, is when he's running around, trying to find his guys. So we're going to see. I do still favor the Eagles in that game, but I just want to see that. I want to see how their defense reacts to a guy like that.
Yeah, definitely going to have to play quarterback contain. But the good news is they've got a great rushing quarterback that they can go up against in practice to kind of get some experience for how to handle a running quarterback. Got a lot more college football and pro football to talk with you about when we get back from the break.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, and welcome back, Tuscaloosa, to the student section. I am Hayden Work, joined by Ronell Foreman. When we left off, we were touching on some NFL football. Several storylines happening throughout this past weekend. One of them is that Cooper Rush, the backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, who was thrust into action after Dak Prescott's finger injury. Man, he's undefeated so far. In fact, Dallas has only one loss on the record thus far, and it came in week one versus the Buccaneers. And since then, Cooper Rush has taken on the starting position and has gone undefeated. So it's creating some interesting storylines. I'm beginning to see some potential quarterback competition chatter on Twitter feeds and things like that. If Cooper Rush continues to play like this, will there be some competition at that starting quarterback position in Dallas?
I personally do not think so, only because Jerry Jones is not going to let his guy not start. He runs that organization. I mean, obviously, but he's practically the head coach of that organization as well. He's not there. There's no way that he lets Cooper Rush start. Cooper Rush has been playing very well. He's not turning the ball over. That's the main thing. And they're scoring. CeeDee Lamb is also looking like he's really coming to his own now as a wide receiver one. So the Cowboys are good, but I do think that that's Dak's job to keep. Maybe if he comes back and Dak gets hurt again, then it might be a different story, but I don't think he should lose it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, although Rush is playing really well. They took down the Washington Commanders this past Sunday, 25-10. Cooper Rush was 15-27 for 223 yards, and 2 touchdowns, no pick. And CeeDee Lamb, like you mentioned, 6 catches for 97 yards and a touchdown, averaging 16 yards per catch right now are in that game. I think that he is playing well, but I do believe that Dak Prescott is the guy for the Cowboys. I don't believe Cooper Rush is going to come in and take over this position, but he is playing really well. And that is good for the Cowboys. Dak Prescott really hasn't had a fully healthy season the past 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have a guy in Cooper Rush who is operating your offense at a high level and keeping you guys winning when Dak is away just sets you up for success when Dak gets back, so that hopefully you can make a run at the playoffs. I think ultimately Dak, when he gets back, will take that starting job. Run with it. But some other news, Las Vegas Raiders finally get a win this season after going winless to start it off. Josh McDaniels gets that win over his former employer. For those of you who don't know, Josh McDaniels' first year as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. He spent the past several years as the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots. But before that, he was the head coach of the Denver Broncos. Did not do so well. Made some questionable decisions, like drafting Tim Tebow in the first round and starting Tim Tebow in the playoffs and all that, although he did win the game. Denver Broncos are not looking so great. And the Raiders finally get a win. They are now 1-3, which leads the Houston Texans as the only winless team in the NFL. I wouldn't say this was an overly impressive game for the Raiders. Derek Carr was 21 of 34, only 188 yards in the air, no touchdowns. Although Josh Jacobs, man, he went off. He had 28 carries for 144 yards, so obviously big volume there for the star running back from Alabama. He had 2 touchdowns as well. Davante Adams had 9 receptions for 101 yards. Raiders, they get their first win against a team that is underperforming at a tremendous, tremendous rate. I was really high on the Denver Broncos coming into the season, and they're just not looking so good. Are the Denver Broncos doomed this season?
I don't know if they're doomed, especially with having a veteran quarterback like Russell at the helm. But now that Williams is out this season, Melvin Gordon, I feel like that fumble really was that fumble that was ran back. That was deflating, and that I think that changed the game. But I don't know if they can necessarily trust Melvin at this point. He's had 5 fumbles in 5 straight games, so that's ridiculous. And it's going to come down to who's going to step up on the offensive line, and in particular the receiving corps for the Denver Broncos. And the thing is, their receivers, Judy and Sutton, are both very talented. Hamler as well. They have some good receivers, but it seems like none of them at this point of the season has like really taken that next step as receiver one. And so I feel like it's going to come down to what Russ can do, and can he carry the load the rest of the way?
Yeah, I definitely think that it is going to be an interesting storyline to follow. Like you mentioned, Javonte Williams, second year running back for the Denver Broncos, who looked to be a star running back after his rookie season, great rookie season. He is out for the rest of the season, so they need Melvin Gordon to step up, like you mentioned. And I'm sure they're going to be looking in free agency, maybe a trade, get a guy that they can have come in and back up Melvin Gordon, because I just don't believe Melvin Gordon is a 3-down back, a guy that you're going to want to hand the ball to. On every single rushing play. So that'll be something to keep your eyes on as the season continues. The Denver Broncos still trying to find their identity on offense. They do have some very talented skill players and a very seasoned and talented quarterback, but new head coach, new to the system. All these players are new to this system that Nathaniel Hackett's bringing in. And it seems like it's just taking some time for them to get everything situated. A quick score update for you. The Los Angeles Rams are leading San Francisco 3-0 with 6:48 left to go in the first quarter. All right, moving on to the world of college football. We're going to start with the Alabama Crimson Tide. Man, they took down number 20 Arkansas. And to start the game, it looked like it was going to be a blowout. Bryce Young goes 14. They go up 14-0. They get up, I think, eventually 28-0. And then disaster strikes, right? Mm-hmm. Bryce Young lands really funky on his arm, being chased down by Drew Sanders. And he exits the game. Scary times for all Alabama fans. I know I was freaking out. But Jalen Milroe does come back in and lead them to a short scoring drive there after Kool-Aid McKinstry had a phenomenal punt return to set them up with short field position. And a quick update for you guys who are concerned about Bryce Young like I was. He has a shoulder sprain. I believe it's an ACL sprain. According to Nick Saban, it's the kind of injury that he has had before and usually takes him a few days to get his arm strength back and to get comfortable throwing the football. So I'm sure that he will be ready to go against Tennessee, not this weekend, but the next. And it's unknown right now whether or not he will play against Texas A&M. I would not be shocked if he does play, but I bet Jalen Milroe, our backup quarterback, is going to get a lot more reps with the first team offense, especially given how seasoned Bryce Young is. He doesn't necessarily need as many reps with the first team in practice. But yeah, what were your takeaways from this game, Linnell?
You know, the Bryce injury was, you know, that's, yeah, obviously it's tough. It's tough to bear, but you know, he should be okay. Obviously we shouldn't, you know, we don't have to rush him back. And you know, like you said, he's very experienced. So, you know, he doesn't really have to necessarily take as many reps in practice. He's still starting. I'm sure he'll still play very well. But my main takeaway from this game is Jahmyr Gibbs looking very good in the rushing attack. And I feel like having Jalen Milroe out there helped him, in particular because now it's two offensive threats that are both willing to run the ball. So, you know, with Jahmyr looking as good as he did, if we get that Jahmyr consistently, you know, yeah, 200 yards. Obviously, I don't think he's going to 200 yards every game, but if we can get Jahmyr playing like that, I think we're a very dangerous team, and that makes this offense a lot scarier for the opposing team.
Yeah, I think Jahmyr Gibbs kind of used this as a reminder that he's a running back. You know, the conversation that we've had here and a lot of people have had is about Jahmyr Gibbs as a receiving threat, and he is a tremendous receiving threat. He's been one of our best receivers throughout the past, you know, several games, really for the whole season. You'd argue he's been our most reliable receiving option. Didn't really do that much in the receiving game, but he ripped off 2 70-plus yard rushing attacks late in the fourth quarter, and they really needed it too. Alabama was up 28-7 coming into the second half, and they really just had a third quarter meltdown. Arkansas owned the third quarter. They get the game up to, I think it was 23-28. So Arkansas was every bit in this game as you could imagine them to be, and it looked really, really dark for Alabama. Third and 15, perhaps they're going to get a stop. Jalen Milroe rips off his 77-yard run. He is so explosive rushing the ball to kind of shift the momentum back to Alabama. He then throws a 1-yard touchdown to JoJo Earl, and really great to see him back and healthy. I'm sure his role will continue to increase as he gets to practice more with this team, because I think he just came back from injury, so he didn't get to practice as much, which is why he wasn't playing as much. But one of the things I took away from this game was the young receivers. Kobe Prentice with a tremendous touchdown reception deep down the field, showing off his speed. Isaiah Bond, a deep catch. That would have been a touchdown, too. He just had to lay out for that pass. It was thrown just a shade ahead of him, but that, I mean, he had beaten his man. You know, we had talked about, you know, these wide receivers, and maybe some of the speed that we've missed. You know, we lose Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy. We had Jameson Williams last year. All these guys with incredible speed. And we're not quite seeing that speed in that downfield passing attack as early on in this season. But I think you're beginning to see some of these younger guys stepping up. Isaiah Bond, Kobe Prentice, two guys that you need to keep your eyes on. As well as Jojo Earl. Jojo Earl coming back, he's an explosive guy. And then Tyler Harrell, the Louisville transfer, I believe he's also close to being back, and he is the fastest player on our team. Bryce Young was 7 of 13 for 173 yards, one touchdown, one pick in that first quarter there, really. Jalen Milroe, not much on the passing game, only 4 of 9 for 65 yards in that one touchdown, two Jojo Earl. But like you mentioned, Jahmyr Gibbs, 18 carries for 206 yards and two touchdowns. He had a long of 76. And behind him, Jalen Milroe, you know, he ran the ball six times for 91 yards and a touchdown with his long of 77. So Jahmyr Gibbs, man, he got most of the carries. Jace McClellan kind of goes down. He only carried the ball six times. Tremendous drop-off here, you know, behind Jahmyr Gibbs. He had 18 carries. The next running back with the most carries was Jace, six carries for only 11 yards. And then Roydell Williams with five for 17 yards. So Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, is arguably our most explosive weapon right now on offense.
Yes, I agree. I think he is, aside from Bryce, but... Jahmyr, you know, that's the thing. If we can get his run, if you're giving him that the usage, we're running him like we need to, but we're also getting him the ball out of the backfield, it's really just a perfect safety net for either whether it's going to be Bryce or Jalen back there. If no one's open, they have Jahmyr Gibbs on the little out route or scat route. And honestly, he'll probably run it for probably get a first down on it. He's very explosive. He breaks a lot of tackles. He just looked really good. I'm very excited that he's finally coming to his own with the Tide.
Yeah, I think part of that was also helped by the offensive line. I think this is the best that our offensive line has played. You know, I think they were only credited with one sack, and that was the scramble by Bryce Young where he fell and hurt his arm. So really, the offensive line played fantastic. Seth McLaughlin, quick little note, Seth McLaughlin started at center because Darian Dalcourt has been suffering some back spasms this week. Seth McLaughlin looks like the better option at center. And that's just my opinion. Darian Dalcourt has done really well, and that's nothing to take away from him. But I think Seth McLaughlin, when you go back and look at this, his pass protection, even his run blocking has looked really impressive. He played really well against Georgia when he had to start in the SEC championship game last year. So, you know, I'm not a head coach. I'm not an offensive line coach. I can't exactly say what's going on in practices that would lead him not to start. But to me, I think he is our best option at the center position moving forward. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think that position is set yet. I know Darian Dalcourt has been the starter, but I think Seth McLaughlin is pushing for that position, as well as, you know, freshman Tyler Booker. He's pushing these offensive guards too, man. Every time he gets in the game, it seems like the offensive line just run blocks a lot better. He is a mean, mean guard in the run game. So that's another little quick story note to look at. And look ahead to this Texas A&M game. Let's say Jalen Milroe has to start for this Alabama Crimson Tide team. We're at home against a Texas A&M team that's really struggled. They took a big loss to Mississippi State. Are you at all concerned if Jalen Milroe has to start?
Not at all. Jalen Milroe is super explosive. And honestly, that run, that 77-yard run, tears in my eyes, that was incredible. And it was just great seeing that happen, especially since we haven't been able to see him in live play in meaningful, you know, time. As far as A&M, I think A&M has a solid defense, but if they're going to play that poorly on offense, the game has to be played, but I really don't think they stand a chance. You know, now that Johnson's hurt too, there's a lot of questions for them, and I think our defense is still very, very solid. Obviously, you know, our defensive line is very good. Our linebacker, Shane Moody's really catching my eyes. Obviously, Toto is great. So we will see. Anything can happen, but I'm not too concerned.
Yeah, I got a lot more college football talk for you guys when we get back from the break.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back, Tuscaloosa, to the student section. I am your host, Aiden Burke, here, joined by Rennell Foreman. Left off talking about Texas A&M and this matchup that's coming up this Saturday. But they played Mississippi State Saturday, and boy, not pretty for the Aggies. Mississippi State Bulldogs took them down 42-24. This A&M defensive line that we've been talking about gave up 6 yards per carry to Mississippi State. And if you know anything about Mississippi State football, running the football is not exactly something that they like to do. They like to throw the football. They spread it out. They kind of use short passes as their rushing attack. But man, they decided to run. And they ran well, over 140 yards off the ground against this A&M defensive line. And like you mentioned before the break, Max Johnson, their starting quarterback, went down with injury. I'm not sure if he will be able to play against Alabama. But for the meantime, Haynes King, the guy who got the start initially to begin the season, came in for him and played okay. Well, 2 interceptions. For Haynes King, not a great start or return to the starting position. So, this A&M game this Saturday, obviously one of the most hyped up games for Alabama fans after a loss last year and all of the offseason drama between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. How are we liking our chances here with this game? Because I personally feel pretty good. I know I will be at that game, and I will be making sure to make as much noise as possible. But I'm interested to get your thoughts, Rennell. How are you feeling about this matchup?
I'm feeling very good about this game, and especially Haynes King starting. Feel very good about that game. I say this a lot, but anything's possible. But I don't think they have too much of a chance. Not coming into Brian Denny. It's been night game too. It's a shame that all the preseason hype is now done. College game day is going to Kansas, I think. It's a shame, but you know, business will be handled. So just gotta.
Yeah, well, certainly not the fault of Alabama going undefeated. Really, just Texas A&M not living up to any kinds of preseason expectations. We all kind of thought that they might have an outside shot to win the SEC West, perhaps win the SEC Championship game and make it to the playoffs, but nope. 3-2 thus far this season, with losses coming to Mississippi State and Appalachian State, and they look like they take another L this weekend here in Bryant-Denny Stadium. At least that's what we hope. Not a great look. I think last season this game kind of caught Alabama off guard. A&M had already had a few losses on their roster, on their schedule, and Alabama was a big favorite. Kind of walked into a very hostile environment, Kyle Field, and lost on that last second field goal. I don't think that Alabama is going to be caught off guard here with Texas A&M. I think they are more than ready to play this team. I know all the players and Coach Saban will say we don't circle games, but if there's a game that was circled this offseason, I think it was this one. I like our chances. I think that Alabama, even with Jalen Milroe perhaps having to start, I like our chances as well. But you know we're going to get every team's best shot, and A&M is a very talented team. So, like you said, anything could happen. Quick note on this game, guys. For any of our followers who listen to Late Kick with Josh Pate, Josh Pate will be coming in this Thursday to do his live broadcast show from Alabama, and he will be at this game this weekend against Texas A&M. So be on the lookout for Josh Pate starting Thursday here in T-Town. Not a friend of the show by any means, but certainly a guy that is a great commentator, and I know some of our listeners will also follow him as well. Elsewhere in the SEC, Ole Miss took down Kentucky. Man, that was a great matchup. Undefeated versus undefeated. Came down to a really crazy last six series. Kentucky throws the touchdown to give them the lead late in the fourth quarter. Turns out there was pass interference on Kentucky. Backs them up, and then Will Levis, they force a fumble against him. And Ole Miss clinches this thing 22-19. Man, how serious should we be taking Ole Miss?
I don't particularly think they're too much of a factor, especially for us, but they are undefeated. They had a big win. So, it's possible. I think their QB play is a little iffy, and I just don't think they can keep up with us, like, in any way of the game. You know, even if they try to run, they're not, I don't think they run effectively. So we'll see, though. They have some big tests come up. So,
yeah, Jackson Dart, now the starter. He's a transfer from USC, was 15 of 29 for 213 yards. No touchdowns, but an interception against Kentucky. So, definitely an interesting thing. Ole Miss is 5-0, though. So for the first time since, I believe, what was it, 2009, 2015? They have not been 5-0 in a long time, that's for sure. Last season, Lane Kiffin led them to their first ever 10-win season as a football team. And they are already halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss doing some things here. Lane Kiffin doing some things. A lot of questions about them after they lost that litany of assistant coaches, offense coordinator, defense coordinator, both going elsewhere. But so far, so good for the Ole Miss Rebels. Kentucky, I think, still has everything that they wanted to accomplish in front of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to be able to compete with the likes of Georgia after what we saw. They're not rushing the ball very well. They're averaging 2.9 yards per carry, which is low for Kentucky, even with Chris Rodriguez Jr., one of the best running backs in the SEC back. He only averaged 3.8 yards per carry. Only received 72 yards off of 19 carries in this game. So Kentucky looking, maybe not quite as potent offensively as they have been, especially last season, which was the big breakout year for Will Levis. He is still incredibly talented, and I think Kentucky can still do what they want to do, which I believe is New Year's Six Bowl, things like that. Ole Miss, man, they're a team to look for, especially when we start talking about these New Year's Six Bowls and things like that. If their only loss is to Alabama and the rest of college football world kind of collapses, they may be outside playoff contender. I don't know. We'll see. We shall see. You mentioned Kansas, though. Hey, they had a big win this past week as they took down the Iowa State Cyclones. And this weekend, Kansas will play Texas Christian, who also had a big weekend. TCU took down number 18, Oklahoma, 55-24. It was not pretty. TCU, their quarterback, Max Duggan, threw for 302 yards and three touchdowns. He also ran off of five carries for 116 yards and two touchdowns. So, this is the second week in a row that a quarterback comes out and has an excellent rushing performance against Oklahoma. They're bringing Brent Venables as their new head coach, so you're thinking Oklahoma's defense is going to become elite. But he's having to overturn the culture there at OU, and I think that it might take a little while for Oklahoma. Certainly not this season. They're already 3-2. They have the Red River Shootout against Texas this weekend. And just to show you how crazy the Big 12 is right now, Kansas and TCU are undefeated. And College Game Day will be headed to Kansas to host that game instead of the Texas-Oklahoma game, which is happening on the same weekend, and Alabama-Texas A&M. So the Big 12 is wide open. is it realistic to think that Kansas or TCU could end up in the Big 12 championship game?
Yeah, it's definitely realistic. They're undefeated. I still think Oklahoma State is the best team out of the Big 12. But, you know, you win your conference championship, you are in immediate contention to discussion to be in the playoffs. So they just have to handle their business and keep moving forward. Big game this week.
Yeah, big game this week, undefeated versus undefeated. That's a really interesting game that I will be following closely, as it could really have some repercussions about maybe one of these teams making it to the Big 12 championship game to potentially face Oklahoma State, because I do agree with you there. Oklahoma State has looked like the best team in the Big 12. They took down number 16 Baylor 36-25 this past weekend. So, you know, get a little revenge from that Big 12 championship loss right there at the end. The Big 12, man, it is wide open. Wide open. Oklahoma, Texas, the two preseason big blue blood schools that we all thought would be vying for a spot, both have two losses already. And TCU and Kansas, out of the blue, they are undefeated. So, crazy stuff happening in the world of the Big 12. Not so much crazy stuff happening in the ACC, as all things seem to look like they have been for a little while. Clemson, they're back to dominating that league. They stepped it up and they played NC State great there in Death Valley. They beat NC State 30-20. Their defense really stepped up. I tell you, Devin Leary and that NC State offense has been really, really good offense, and they held them to 20 points. DJ Uiagalelei has taken tremendous steps from last season. There was a ton of concern about him and his development coming into this season and whether or not their true freshman quarterback would take that starting position. He played great, 21 of 30 for 209 yards and a touchdown. He also ran the ball 14 carries for 73 yards and two touchdowns. So three touchdowns on the day for DJ Uiagalelei. I mean, can we just go ahead and pencil Clemson in for the ACC champion?
Yeah, I'd say so. That league is so weak. No discredit to Clemson. They've done this consistently, so gotta give them their credit, but there's no one, I think, this year in the SEC that beats them. I think Clemson's only challenge this year is when they go up to South Bend to play Notre Dame, so we'll see about that. But we can't even say Notre Dame is really an elite team this year either, so.
Yeah, no, I think Clemson's toughest tests are behind them. They made it through Wake Forest. They had to take it overtime. Obviously, they get a 10-point win here against NC State, so not dominating fashion. Yeah. But I do believe those were the two toughest teams that Clemson's going to have to face this season, and they managed to get through unscathed. That's all that really matters. They face Boston College. They do have Florida State. Florida State's played relatively well. And Syracuse. Now, Syracuse is all of a sudden playing great. You know, Syracuse is 5-0 right now, just like Clemson. And potentially Syracuse could be vying for another one of those spots there for the ACC championship game. Notre Dame, like you mentioned, they have. And later on down the line, Miami and South Carolina. But yeah, I think Clemson, I like them versus everybody that I'm seeing on their schedule right now. There's not a team that I think will be favored against them. So I think Dabo Sweeney may have the Clemson Tigers back to the perennial playoff appearance like he's had them for several years now. So perhaps last season really just was a fluke. Mm-hmm. And they did not look as dominant as they have in the past. Michigan looks to continue their dominance from last season. Obviously, the defending Big Ten champions made it to the College Football Playoff. They had their toughest test of the season so far when they had to go to Iowa City and play Iowa. They walk away with a 27-14 win. And one of the things that Iowa loves to do is take away the ball. They force interceptions better than anybody else in the country. And J.J. McCarthy, their second-year quarterback, he threw zero interceptions. They ran for over 170 yards. JJ threw for over 150 yards. I don't know. Michigan 5-0. You know, that game that they will play against Ohio State really could determine which one of those teams represents the Big Ten East in the SEC, in the Big Ten Championship game, right?
I agree, 100%. We can't just count out Penn State either. That the Big Ten has some nice teams that are doing very well as of now. But if I'm gonna bet my money, I'd probably go with Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Ohio State's looked great even without Jackson Smith and Jigba, their best pass catching option. Penn State still undefeated as well. So quick notes here. Wisconsin has fired their head coach, Paul Chryst. Kind of out of the blue for a lot of people, but I think if you follow the sport at a micro level and you kind of have been watching Wisconsin, they really should have been dominating the Big Ten West. There's not a ton of great teams there. All of the dominant teams in the Big Ten, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, they're all in the Big Ten East. And it's been Wisconsin's league there to win. They just haven't been able to do it. And Colorado has fired their head coach, Carl Durrell. Colorado's just looked really bad the past two seasons. They just looked bad. They've been a terrible, terrible program, bottom tier program. So I think that totally makes sense. All right, quick notes on the AP poll. Alabama has jumped Georgia. We are now the number one team in the AP. Not much movement in the top six. Oklahoma up to number seven. Ole Miss inside the top 10 at number nine now. And Penn State as well in the top 10, moving up one spot there. Utah and Oregon both jump up one spot, 11 and 12 respectively. Kentucky falls all the way down to number 13. NC State falls four spots to 14. Wake up seven spots for 15. They kind of just fell really far for their loss and then jumped really far back up after their victory over Florida State. BYU up to 16. TCU at 17, UCLA at 18, and Kansas at 19. Those three teams right there, if you're watching football, you are just an observer of all things football, watch those three teams in their respective leagues. Kansas up 5 to 20. Washington down 6 to 21 after their loss. Syracuse undefeated at 22. Mississippi State finally in the top 20. I think that they've been highly underrated. They are 4-1. Cincinnati at 24. And rounding out top 25 is Brian Kelly, LSU. They will take on Tennessee this weekend. That'll be a great matchup. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to catch us next week. I've been Aiden Wart, joined by Ronell Foreman. And this was the Student Section.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.